Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Crypto. On this episode, we have a guest, Dave Hendricks, co-founder and CEO of Vertalo. Vertalo is a platform for issuers and broker-dealers to manage security tokens and cap tables on-chain. Dave, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jose. It's great to be here.
So, discussing Vertalo briefly, Vertalo isn't a broker-dealer. It's not an issuer. It's not a KYC AML provider. It's not a custodian. What is it?
So what we are is a very, very important data management layer that kind of knits all these pieces together. It's really funny. We got into this because we issued our own security token in March of 2018, and we couldn't find anybody that could help us with managing the very important investor stakeholder data that was produced after an issuance. We thought, wow, this looks a lot like a cap table, and we know a lot about cap tables, so we should build a cap table that can manage digital assets and connect to broker dealers, issuance platforms, exchanges, KYC, and custodians. And so basically what we are is a set of APIs that connects all those players together and produces a nice visual layer so that you can see your data.
Great, and we'll jump into the STO ecosystem, but before that, I think it's important to understand how traditional equity fundraising works, and then to go into and understand how tokenizing a security works. So can you tell me a little bit about how traditional equity fundraising would work for a startup today? Say I'm Uber in 2009 and I have 20 investors that want to put in $2 million. What does the traditional equity fundraising look like?
Well, it certainly looks a lot different than, say, doing an ICO or an STO. So raising money is about meeting a lot of investors and finding the investors that like what you're doing and can be supportive over a long period of time. Because in equity investing, specifically in startups, the lifespan of the relationship between an investor and an issuer, in this case, like the VC and the company, often lasts 7, 9, 11 years or more. And so what you're doing is you're really trying to figure out who you can get married to as a company for many, many years. And then what happens is when those companies are invested in, when a VC invests in a company, say like Uber, they pledge funding that gets them a percentage of the company at a particular price with specific rights, and then they end up on a cap table. That's kind of the result of the whole process. And a cap table, in the most simple sense, is a spreadsheet that lists who owns how much stock at what price, when they bought it, and under what terms. And every company in the world that has more than one owner, more than one shareholder, pretty much needs a cap table so that everyone understands, you know, how much they own and under what terms. And so regular fundraising, to your question, collects a bunch of investors and puts them onto a spreadsheet. And that is then managed for the life of the company until it's sold or it dies.
Can you tell me a little bit more about some of the parties involved with the cap table? So there's custodians, there's transfer agents, there's broker dealers and issuers. So does the broker dealer manage the relationship with the investor? Can you tell me a little bit about who directly manages the cap table?
So cap tables in kind of the traditional sense are run either by someone in the finance department at a company. If it's a small company, maybe by the CEO, or at a larger company, probably a corporate secretary or a CFO in conjunction with the law firm that helps the company. The cap table is, has historically and traditionally been something managed by an outside law firm or instigated by an outside law firm at the time of a funding event. So everyone wants to know, okay, if I invest this much, how much do I own? Who has invested previously, et cetera. And until really recently, and until, you know, companies like Carta came along, That was often done on a spreadsheet, and it was often managed by the lawyers for the company. This is for VC companies. For other companies, it was often just managed very casually on a spreadsheet. The cap table is not so much a function of broker dealers or transfer agents for private companies or custodians, because they don't typically manage the cap table. It's only until later on, when that private stock is traded, when broker dealers and transfer agents and custodians might get involved. In a private company, transferring stock from one individual to another or from one entity to another doesn't require a broker dealer or a transfer agent or a custodian. It can be done simply by the company itself or with the company's lawyers. When companies get big, when there are legal jurisdictions involved, when they go public, that's when you definitely need custodians to escrow funds. That's when you need transfer agents to transfer the certificates from one party to another and record that. And then when you might need a broker dealer to be the broker in the sale of the shares. So typically those last three elements, custodians, broker dealers, and transfer agents, they are typically required in public equities, but not typically required or even utilized in the transfer or sale of private equities.
Great. So with private equity, so there's essentially a contract that gets signed and it states how many shares an investor gets. Is that essentially like a certificate that an investor has and says what ownership they have, but the startup itself manages who owns what shares?
Yeah, so the certificates are typically prepared at the end of a transaction, and they can be held in trust, or they can be distributed to the end holder. In many companies, people never ever see their certificates at all. The ownership is just encoded on a spreadsheet or in some system, and they actually never see the certificate. One of the reasons why certificates are not that important people don't place a lot of importance on them in private companies is because unlike, say, cryptocurrencies, which are bearer assets, most private company equity stock certificates are not bearer instruments, meaning just because you own this certificate doesn't mean that you can sell the shares freely to any other party. Typically, you need permission. It's called a right or first refusal, or some other approval in order to transfer your holdings in a private company to another individual or entity. The reason for that is that companies don't want their shares to be sold to competitors. And so they restrict transfer of those shares subject to board or other approval. So certificates are usually nice things to frame, but you can't walk down the street and sell them to somebody and then say, okay, I just transferred this. That typically requires approval.
So it sounds like secondary markets for securities are a little illiquid. Can you tell me a little bit about like what are some of the popular ways that securities get traded on secondary markets?
So yes, private shares are less liquid than public shares. The reason is that typically with public shares, you have a listing arrangement with an exchange or a broker dealer, when they may and often do make a market in that security. So there's always a buyer of last resort in the public markets. That is what creates liquidity. There's not only a market for them, but there's also an established price history. And then there are documents that contain disclosures and other information that enables the buyer to assess the shares that are being offered. So all of that information, all of that infrastructure, all the connections between those parties, the existing, kind of system, that is what creates liquidity for public equities, public stocks, et cetera. This is much different in private equities. Private equities do not have markets like public equities do. Most private shares are sold through platforms like maybe SharesPost, or they're done in private OTC transactions, which are often managed by a broker dealer or someone else who is, or a lawyer or somebody that is able to put the two parties together and complete documents. I mean, the thing is that when you go and you sell your shares of Apple, you don't have to review a private placement memorandum. You don't have to go and ask Apple for permission to do it. Basically, public means, yeah, if you own these things, you have the right to buy and sell them. Everybody does, subject to minor restrictions. The reason why private markets are illiquid is because those rights of trade and transfer are not conferred to you with a certificate. They're buried in usually dense private placement memorandums. And before you decide you can trade them, you need to go back to the board or to some other party at the company in order to trade them. Now, what's happening in the digital asset markets is the digital asset markets, like what Vertalo, my company, is involved in, we are busy building the infrastructure to improve liquidity, not create liquidity, because liquidity is not created by mechanisms, it's created by demand. But what companies like Vertalo and its partners like Open Finance and Prime Trust and other players in this sector, this ecosystem, what we are doing is we're creating the rails to enable lower latency, lower friction trade and transfer of these private assets. The way you do that in digital assets is by imbuing some rights within smart contracts. So the reason why you use smart contracts for the ownership of digital securities instead of paper is because by giving the investor ownership of an asset in a wallet with the rules for trade and transfer imbued in the token or the smart contract, it's easier for these trade and transfer operations to occur. So smart contracts are meant not only to confer ownership, but also to communicate rights and to communicate restrictions on trade and transfer. This is meant to be an improvement on the current paper-based process that's where most private equities are managed now, where there's a lot of people that have to get involved in a transaction.
Great. So I've heard you say in the past that companies should raise money first and then tokenize. So does Vertalo essentially allow any startup that has raised money to go on the platform and basically digitize or tokenize their cap table? And also, is it also possible to STO initially with Vertalo, or do you have to raise your funds first and then use the platform?
Vertalo can work with issuers at any point in their life cycle. We can work with them before they've raised money, after they've raised money, even after they've raised money and issued a token through some security token protocol. It doesn't really matter. We can come in and help in any ways. I believe that it's easier to raise money without a token, but if you want to raise money against a token, you can use Vertalo. If you've already raised money via a token and now you have this, list of investors and you don't know what to do with it, well, Vertalo can manage that, tokenize that list of investors and give them an interface for managing their token holdings. So we have interfaces for issuers, we have interfaces for broker dealers, and we have interfaces for investors to manage one or multiple token offerings. But to answer your first question, Vertalo can take any cap table and upload it into our system and turn that analog cap table into a digital tokenized version of that cap table and distribute those tokens to the investors who previously invested. Not only that, we can also tokenize an offering and distribute it to wallets for investors without the investors having to know anything about how to operate a wallet. So, you know, it's our theory that the main impediment to digital asset adoption is the complexity, the technical complexity, the hassle of working with tokens and wallets. Most people don't know how to deal with it. It's scary. They think they're going to lose them. Everyone's always saying, private keys. Oh no, you're going to lose your private keys, or hackers are going to steal my stuff. So because of that, we've scared away a lot of investors in STOs and in crypto, because we've scared them with wallets, private keys, and tokens. Vertalo's designed a system which is, you probably take a look and think, wow, that's like Coinbase for digital assets, for you know, digital equities. In Coinbase, you didn't need to know about a wallet and you didn't need to know about tokens. You just bought things that you liked based on the project and the price, and you didn't have to worry about custodying them. The difference is that with Vertalo, if you're sophisticated, you can bring your own wallet and you can transfer from the custodial wallets we create to your own self-sovereign wallet. And then, you know, you're still subject to the transfer and trade restrictions of the token, but you can take control. So you don't have to use all of our centralized wallets if you don't want to.
Great. And if somebody were to use their own wallet, would they have to, how would the verification process work for a wallet outside of the Vertalo platform?
Yeah. So more than a year ago, like a year and a half ago or so, we started working with a custodian called Prime Trust to develop a wallet ownership mechanism. So we developed a technique using a smart contract, using a token, not like one that we sell or raise money, just we actually use the blockchain technology to help someone prove that they owned a wallet. It's kind of similar to the mechanism that you use to prove you own a bank account or a credit card, you deposits. And so this wallet control mechanism is something that we developed so that people could bring their own wallets, and they could bring as many wallets as they wanted for every offering, and then store their tokens or digital asset securities in whatever wallet they wanted to. So that's something that we developed in mid 2018. Subsequent to that, you know, we came to the realization though that a lot of people didn't want to manage their own wallets, and they didn't want to deal with private keys. And so we developed keyless custodial wallets in addition.
Would you say Vertalo is a platform, say like E-Trade, where E-Trade's more for public, but essentially the investors don't hold their stocks and bonds. E-Trade holds their stocks for them, except with Vertalo, you have the option to self-custody.
Yeah, I would say that Vertalo, for an investor, Vertalo looks similar to E-Trade. In Vertalo, you can manage multiple tokens from that were issued by any issuer. We currently support Tezos and Ethereum based tokens in our system, and so you can manage in any of your holdings in those two protocols in our system as an investor. And you don't really need to know anything more about it than that. And then as an issuer, we are very similar to a cap table. So, you know, that's, you know, you can see all of your investors and their holdings, and you can communicate with your investors and et cetera, you know, and you're connected to them by a smart contract. So there's really two sides of it. There's the issuer side, which is like cap table. And, you know, think about that. That's almost like Carta. And then we have this other side, which is the investor side, which is almost like E-Trade. And the reason why that's different than, say, Carta is that, you know, as an investor, if you have, you know, investments in companies that use Carta, Carta's great, but Carta doesn't offer you any ability to trade those shares. You just basically can see them and own them. What Vertalo does is by putting that ownership in your control, we call that direct ownership, we're able to connect your wallet to the listing exchange, and then we give you the opportunity or the option to potentially trade that digital asset. Because right next to your holding, there's a little button that says trade. And that little button in the Vertala system links via API to the listing exchange that that token is trading on. Doesn't have to be a security token. It can be any token where there's that relationship and where we set that up. But so Cardano on one side, E-Trade on the other. The difference is direct ownership and direct listing.
And you guys are partnered with some of these listing exchanges?
Oh, yeah. So we've got partnerships with Open Finance, T0. We're working on ones in Korea and Japan and the UK right now. We're working on some other big ones in the United States. Of course, we've got multiple custodial partnerships. We have multiple KYC, AML, and accreditation partnerships. We have multiple broker-dealer partnerships. And we've got partnerships with token issuance platforms as well. However, Vertalo is quite adept also at issuing tokens. And, you know, we are one of the first issuers of a security token. We had to do all that stuff ourselves. So we know quite a bit about the whole life cycle as an issuer ourselves.
Great. And backing up to talk a little bit about the STO ecosystem, can you tell me a little bit about the Reg D token offering?
Well, I think that in the United States that most tokens have been issued under Reg D. Reg D is an offering for your listeners. This is known as an exempt offering. It means it can't be sold to the public and has to be sold to mostly accredited investors. And there are various other restrictions, such as the number of stakeholders that you can have. There's also the Reg S. There are a lot of issuers in the United States who are using Reg S to sell to foreign investors. The difference between a Reg D and a Reg S is that a Reg S does not allow you to sell those tokens to U.S. citizens, and they cannot be traded between a foreign holder and a U.S. holder. There's Reg CF. There haven't been that many Reg CF security tokens because the cost of doing a security token has been fairly steep, and Reg CF only enables you to raise a little over $1 million. And so it hasn't really been a great way to raise money. And then you see there are security tokens that are being used to raise money in the UK, in Dubai, and Liechtenstein, and Singapore, and soon Japan.
Great. So with Reg D, it removes the requirement to register with the SEC, therefore making it a lot easier to STO. So can you tell me a little bit about some of the clients that you have at Vertalo? Do you have any, or how many people are on Vertalo? Has anybody STO'd?
Yeah. So, well, whether they've STO'd or not, you know, again, we're not focused so much on security token offerings as we are in managing the data related to offerings. So we've got 10 clients right now, and they're in various stages of either raising money or have raised already, because we're really focused. Like I said earlier in the conversation, we don't think that going out and raising money on a security token right now for a startup is a great idea. That's why there's no liquidity in these things. Okay. It's because no one trades early stage companies. So what we've been focused on are working with much larger offerings that already have raised money, but want to digitize their shares and prepare them for future trading. So we are working on, we've got 10 clients now, and we've been working on a pipeline of hundreds, including we've got a pipeline of about 35 REITs that we're working on right now, where the value of the assets is in the high tens of billions of dollars. This is where all the real interesting action is, because STOs, like security tokens, are not great for fundraising. They're really, really great for improving liquidity. They're really great for reducing the cost of ownership. They're great for process improvement, for record keeping. There's a lot of institutional benefits from them. That's really what we're focused on. We're focused on a better issuer experience, a better ownership experience. And those two things create improved liquidity. When it becomes easier to exchange, to trade, to buy these things, that's when this takes off. This will not take off as long as unfundable startups are trying to use tokens to go and raise $5 or $10 million. Most of the projects doing that have failed, and they've failed because if they couldn't get raised money via traditional VC, there's no reason why a private accredited investors are going to raise money just because it's a token. That's not our market. We think that's going to be a market. That will be a market once all the rails are built, but it's not been a market. It's certainly not for early stage startups.
Great. So key difference here between STO and tokenized securities. Tokenized securities, you have already raised your funds first and you're simply tokenizing the securities.
Yeah. And then, you know, and you can tokenize them at any time. I mean, you can tokenize them and not make them ready for trade. You can tokenize them because you want to then spend the next 6 months or a year working out all the kinks so that you can trade them. You can tokenize them because it's easier to manage the data or because you want to have peer-to-peer trading, but not, you don't tokenize it because you want to raise money. You tokenize it because it's a better way to manage the data. And it's, you know, the ownership experience is better for investors and the record keeping is better for issuers. You know, it's just there are a couple of things in crypto that people are really interested in. One of those things is double spend. Okay. And also another thing is, it's immutable or it's, you know, it's auditable. So by taking your paper shares and digitizing them, everybody understands how much has been issued and who owns what. And it's very, very clear as an investor that you own this and it's in your wallet. That's much different than proxy ownership. And then later on, it makes it easier to sell. If you're running a stock option program at a company, you can use tokenization processes to do drip distributions of options to wallets, to employee wallets. And those wallets and the tokens within those wallets can then be subject to transfer and trade restrictions. But the thing is that you can actually see them. I mean, in startups, one of the biggest problems is cap tables. And within those cap tables are the options programs and whether they've been properly administered. As an employee at a startup, it's quite possible that what the number of shares in your offer letter that might not end up on the cap table if someone screws up and forgets to get a board consent. By taking options programs and putting them on chain and then showing your options to you in a wallet, at least you know that the options have been granted and that you're getting them distributed to you in a regular kind of fashion. That's just one application. The improvements to ownership and to trackability and to auditability are tremendous compared to spreadsheets and paper ledgers. That's really the kind of stuff that we're interested in. And we think that it has a big market.
Great. And how can, sort of wrapping up here, how can tokenizing securities be made easier, whether it's as an industry or something that you guys are working on now at Vertelo? How can this process be made even easier for startups?
Well, Jose, you've actually, like, this is the payoff right here. Making interfaces better, reducing technical requirements, making it so you don't have to be an expert in wallets or in tokens, making it look like what people already know, making it look more like Coinbase, that is going to help adoption. That's how this market grows. Up until now, the investors and all the parties have had to be experts in tokens, and then they had to know how to use MetaMask, and they had to remember all these private keys. That stuff just kills adoption. Whenever someone bumps into that, they say, I'm going to pass. So the key to mass adoption is massive simplification. If you don't simplify the process and you say, look, what people are investing in is not the token. They're investing in the company that the token represents And then the fact that they can trade their shares in that company more easily, whether it's in, you know, if it could be done more easily without a token, people would do it without a token. But the problem is that you can't, the token makes it easier, but only if you improve the interfaces.
Great. And enhancing user experience has slowly been getting better, and not just with tokenizing securities, but crypto as a whole. And lastly here, Dave, is there any regulatory challenges that you're facing right now? Is there any piece of news that you're anticipating to hear from the SEC? Can you tell me a little bit about the regulatory side?
Well, I think that we'll get our transfer agent license here at Vertala this quarter. We have a lot of securities lawyers working on our team. And so this is something that we haven't felt we needed to get, but we decided to get it anyway.
And Vertala has a security token ecosystem on their site that hosts all the major players right now in the ecosystem for tokenizing securities, from broker dealers to compliance to issuance. So all of this will be linked down below. And Dave, where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can reach me at dave.hendricks@vertala.com. That's H-E-N-D-R-I-C-K-S. at vertala.com.
Great, Dave. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jose.